Welcome to the Sit Rep, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Austin, and we got some stuff to get into. This is going to be releasing a few hours later than normal. To be fair, I'd had some stuff come up and then also kind of had a change of course, a shift of the direction of what I wanted to talk about with this iteration, if you will, based on some some information, some things that were brought to light recently, but then also some stuff this morning that was shared with me in a group chat that I believe just came out of a Breitbart interview with Eric Prince. You guys might know Eric Prince's name. He was the founder of the, highly controversial Blackwater Military Contractors. Now he's doing something else in business, some kind of technology, something or other. I don't know for sure. Former Navy SEAL. I did read his book, which was good and informative, but did an interview with Breitbart and got into this whole discussion about letters of mark. And if you guys don't know what that is or the history behind those to some extent, we're going to get into some of that. That's what these are for. If you guys are joining us for the first time, this is your first your first Sunday sit rep with us. We use these discussions to kind of talk about some current events, share our opinion on it, as always, right? Because that's what we do. But hopefully they're just as informative and can fill in some knowledge gaps, or you have one of those I didn't know that, one of those moments, based off of some of the stuff that we're able to present here. So there's typically more of a factual research base behind some of this stuff. I just had my wife sit down and help me. We did some light research on a couple of things we're going to talk about today, gather some information, do some bullet pointing and things so that I have this, this ammo, if you will, right? So that I can present to you guys, and we have a good discussion about these couple of things. We're going to talk about a couple of bills. One's a constitutional amendment proposal. One would be a bill, I think, and then, like I just said, we're going to reference this Breitbart interview or article, whatever, from today with Eric Prince. I think that it would raise some it would raise some interesting questions. Let's just say it that way. I think a lot of people would. I know the initial reactions to it were not what are. It's not what would be accurate to the letter of the law. Although we haven't really used letters of mark in this country for. We're closer than not to 100 years, so we'll get into it. I gathered some information on this. We shared some context, but before we get into this week's information, I want to say thank you to the presenting sponsors of the Prepared Mindset Podcast that make everything we do here possible, and is the reason why I'm able to bring this content to you guys for free every week. And with that, we're going to say thank you to our friends at CustomNightVision.com. We're going to start off with those guys because, man, they're a bunch of home run hitters. If you guys are looking to get into night vision, if you have questions, if you're looking for upgrades, accessories, anything and everything night vision, CustomNightVision.com is your one-stop shop. They have a great chat function that's built into the website. It's the lower right-hand corner when you head on over there. You can reach out and send a message, and you will be connected to Trevor or Kevin or Ben, one of the guys over at Custom. We'll be able to answer your questions. So if you're looking into getting your very first device, and I know a lot of people are right now, they will be able to answer some questions, even if it's something they don't necessarily sell. Questions on things like Omni tubes, which a lot of people have questions on because they're somewhat ambiguous to the uninitiated, right? They can answer that. They can point you in the right direction. Hey, you know what? Go with a white phosphor L-bit tube or a green phosphor, or this is, the differences between L3 and L-bit. Or if you're trying to save some money, here's the differences you might see between something like a Photonis tube and an L3 or Photonis and L-bit. Those weird questions. Right, that people that really don't have night vision, that haven't really spent the time diving into the subject, that's what the team at Custom is there for, to answer those questions and to give you guys the most transparent buying experience that they possibly can. So whether you're looking for a tried and true option like the PVS-14 single tube device, or maybe some RNVGs from AB Night Vision, fixed bridge, rugged as hell, you could literally play baseball, it would be the ball, or you can check out something new like the Manticore from Nocturne Industries or the MH1 from Lloyd Innovations. Those guys just dropped a whole bunch of new stuff at SHOT Show just a couple weeks ago and are very, very exciting and very fun to use. And like I said, past that, they're your one-stop shop, guys. If you need lights, You need laser devices. You need a helmet. You need mounts. They carry the good stuff from Wilcox, Team Wendy, B.E. Myers, Steiner Laser Units, all kinds of stuff. Again, it's customnightvision.com. Head on over and check it out for yourselves today. Next is a thank you to American Defense Manufacturing. You guys, admfg.com. That's their website. And they sent me out one of their 13.9 Mod 2 uppers, complete with a Criterion barrel, one of their bolt carrier groups. Man, it is outstanding. It came with the Surefire muzzle device, pin and welded, which actually offers an option. So if you guys run the popular stuff like Dead Air, like Surefire, like Huxworks, you can actually have a shorter length upper. They'll pin and weld it if you desire. If you don't, then you just let them know. They won't do that either. And these are great, great upper receivers, you guys. They make fantastic ambi lower receivers, too, if you're wrong-handed and you need that kind of thing, or if you're just looking to buy them both together and get a really, really premium rifle setup. Again, it's admfg.com. Head over to the website. And if you're already set on a blaster, you guys, have no fear. You can also check out their scope mounts. They have a great upgrade for the LS series of Hollow Sun lasers. They have optic risers. They have all kinds of good stuff going on over there. Head to the website. Again, it is admfg.com. Check it all out for yourself today and pick up some new kit. Thank you as well to Orion Training Group. You guys, they are our newest supporter and sponsor of the podcast, and we have been fortunate as a team here to take many classes with the cadre at Orion Training Group. So we all took their class here in May in Michigan. It was a three-day structure clearance course at Battlefield CQB, where we now regularly train, where Jason and Jared were up here in Michigan. 3 days of 8-hour training. It was amazing. It was awesome. We've taken their classes at the HTA charity event as well, learning from Alex and Blake with Maneuver Training Solutions. I learned from Joe Pistone and Jared at my first one. Even Mitchell, their dedicated media guy, who's now, I believe, doing some really, really awesome stuff in law enforcement on his own because of the training that Orion was able to provide, to him. You guys, it's OrionTrainingGroup.com. Head over to the website, check out their entire course schedule, sign up and learn some shit, you guys. They're a fantastic company with some very dedicated and passionate instructors. Last, certainly not least, 100 Concepts, you guys. 100concepts.com. That is the website, and the motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. I mean, really, what else do we have to say more than that, right? They make some outstanding products. You guys are probably aware their light caps, their scope caps, and they're always innovating, they're always upgrading, and they're always working to bring more options to the market for you guys. So if there's a new light that comes out, new light head or something that just has killer output, maybe it's this new series that ModLight dropped at SHOT Show that everyone's really excited about, they're already working to get those options that fit perfectly for those devices out onto the website and into your guys' hands, can be more effective in the field. Again, it's 100concepts.com. Head over to the site, pick up some light caps, some scrim, their chem light kits, all kinds of really, really good stuff. They're a tremendous group of guys there. Jonah, Garrett, Pierce, all of them, the whole team at 100. Solid, solid people. Great company. Go check it out. Sincerely, though, thank you guys. Like, all of our sponsors are just some really incredible individuals, some great companies, some awesome people making great products. We were customers of all of these places before we started working with them. We've put our money where our mouth is, so to speak. We were customers. We bought their goods on our own dime and are thrilled and proud to work with all of them. Now, let's get down to brass tacks for this week. We're going to talk about, we'll start light. Get some coffee going. It's been a little bit of a rough day. We got a bill here that we're going to talk about to add Donald Trump to Mount Rushmore. And I mean, on one hand, you think about Mount Rushmore and you're like, damn, how long has it been since we added anyone? Well, I mean, we never added anybody past the initial construction, right? So construction began in like October of 27. That's 1927 for all of you non-math majors. So almost 100 years ago at this point, and was completed in 1941. And this is located out in Keystone, South Dakota. So it has four of probably the most notable, if not the absolute most notable presidents in American history. So Washington, Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. And it's a monument. People travel there. They go see it and everything. And it's kind of this remembrance of the greatness and the great men which helped shape our country as we know it today. Now, we do have this bill introduced by Representative Ana Paulina Luna. She's a Republican from Florida, has introduced the bill to include Donald Trump. And listen, it's not that I don't think that we couldn't update the monument or add to it. Because, I mean, when we think about monuments, when we think about great presidents and great leadership, it only stands to reason that we would eventually have additionally great, historically impactful leaders in our country, in our country's history, rather. So yes, Washington, Jefferson, Roosevelt, Lincoln, all fantastic leaders that did a lot of different things. However, and we haven't added anybody, you know, in the interim between then, and maybe there's a lot that probably don't move the needle in terms of what they could do. And certainly a lot of people don't like Mount Rushmore, because of the slave ownership tied to Washington, Jefferson, things like that. Some of the, I mean, we went through this whole phase. We're actually still in this phase in this country where people are, we're tearing down historical monuments, all the time. There are people that are super into that. They think that we should just tear down everything. And I disagree with that vehemently. I think that if we tear down all remembrance, all recall to our past, we're doomed to repeat it, right? There's even that saying, right? I've said it before on the pod, those who ignore their past are doomed to repeat it. And I think that we kind of are in a lot of ways right now, because we like to turn a blind eye. We like to have our education system teach revisionist history and things like that, that push a political agenda more than actually just teaching literal history, which, yeah, is a problem, as you might imagine. So I don't know about this. I mean, I guess we could wait and see, right? Like, it's his second term, right? We're starting the second term of Donald Trump, and some awesome stuff has already happened, right? I mean, we've already made a drastic posture change with our border security issue. I think we've pretty much cut off funding to Ukraine at this point. The stock market adjusted in a pretty positive way. Rates went down in a really positive way in a very short amount of time. Those are good things, but I don't think that you could look at that alone based off of whatever was accomplished in his first term, which, is, to be clear, I think his first term, could be ruled as a success. I think we need more time really to evaluate all that. I know that a lot of his first term, unfortunately, was spent, fighting legal battles. That's the problem that Donald Trump really faces with a legacy is that, yes, he will be a two-term president, albeit an interrupted one, right? Because we had 4 years of the Biden shit show that we all had to endure, and are recovering from, obviously. But the first 4 years, I think, will be marred forever by the Russian collusion, the Steele dossier, all the crap, right? All the shit that we watched on the news during his entire presidency. And yes, you could look at record market highs, and there's all kinds of positive things, but there was, you know, who was in office the last time we had a record market high? It might have been Clinton. Clinton's whole presidency is going to be defined by like the last 3 years where, you know, with Monica Lewinsky and things like that. It's just the way that the news cycle works. And as we get more access to more information and news, I think it makes it more and more difficult if you're somebody who is in political office trying to build a legacy for yourself, because people don't forget, you know, it's not like it once was where you just hang the papers and they'll be forgotten in a couple of days. So I think we really have to wait and see until Trump is done with his second term. And then if there really is the desire by, I don't know, I don't think it should just be the politicians that make those decisions. I really don't. I think that when we're talking about representation of our government and our country as a whole and what we, a people, see as a good, strong leader, I don't think that can be defined, especially not in this day and age, by elected leadership. I think that our elected leadership has proven time and again that they are not really trustworthy in that regard. They kind of are self-serving, right? Not even kind of, they are self-serving. And they really, if they were to just force us through in a bill without any kind of consensus or something, you know what I mean? Like of the American people, I think that would be really wrong. I do. I don't see this one making a whole lot of sense. I think it's actually kind of just pandering I mean, cool, build up support for Donald Trump. I think with what he has in front of him over the next 4 years, more support is definitely not going to be a bad thing. I do just think that, man, this one just kind of feels like we're jumping the gun. And we'll wait and see. It'll probably, honestly, if I had to make a prediction, I don't think anything's going to happen with it. I just think it's hilarious that even with as much pandering as there was, you know, in government the last couple of years with the Democratic Party, I was never aware of anybody actually making the recommendation that you add Joe Biden to, or Barack Obama for that matter. I mean, many would argue, I'm not saying I do, but many would argue that Obama should be added to Mount Rushmore because he's the first black president. But I think that his skin color alone does not merit his addition to this monument. Just like I think you could look at Trump as being the first orange president, right? And say, I don't know that his skin color is enough to get him up there. So with that, I we'll wait and see. But I think, like I was saying, it largely depends on his second term and how that goes. Now, speaking of Donald Trump and his second term, there was additionally now a constitutional amendment that was proposed to grant Donald Trump to seek a third term. Yes. Yes. You guys are hearing that correctly. A third term. Now, keeping a couple things in mind here, right? He just, not a month yet, he has just started his second term in office. So, the weird part with this, because we have had presidents that served a third term. Well, actually, I think it was just one. Franklin Roosevelt was elected to a third term in 1940 and actually did get elected for a fourth term in 44, but he died in 45, so that didn't really happen. You know, I mean, technically, he did have a fourth term, albeit extremely short. I think it was about a year. And in response to that, the 22nd Amendment was ratified about 5 years later. I think it was 50 or 51. And that now it's an official thing. Before, it was like a tradition, right? Like, because Washington, which you guys should know as our very first president of the United States, he voluntarily sought only two terms and then did not seek re-election for a third. So it's never really been, up till that point in, was it 51 or whatever, it wasn't an actual law that banned seeking a third term, obviously, because it happened. It was just something like for tradition's sake, or I guess it was just like good manners or something, right, that many of these presidents did not seek a third term. Now, that's not to say it didn't happen. Because before it was banned, both Grant and Teddy Roosevelt ran for third terms in 1880 and in 1912, respectively. Now, they did not win re-election for those third terms, but they did try. So, I mean, just to point all of this out, right, to say that it wasn't very common. It did happen. People did try. It only really actually happened once. The odd part about this, right, is it would allow Donald Trump to seek a third term, but we have three other presidents that were two-term presidents in this country who are still living. Constitutional amendment, this proposal for this amendment, would not allow Clinton, Bush, and Obama to seek election for a third term, which doesn't really, I mean, hurt my feelings. Because I don't like any of them, pretty much. I think Obama has become a gigantic political mouthpiece since leaving office. Bush hasn't done, I think, hardly a damn thing. And we can't really say anything bad about Bill Clinton because his wife will unalive all of us if we utter a harsh word about them. But this House joint resolution was introduced, last week. I think it was the 23rd. Representative Andy Ogles from Tennessee. He's a Republican. He's the one that suggested this. And while running for this past election, Trump actually did make comments repeatedly that he could run for a third term, but it was usually him joking. You know, nobody really took that as a serious declaration of interest in seeking out a third term. He's actually even publicly come out and said that somebody's looking to terminate the 22nd Amendment. Not for me. I wouldn't be in favor for it at all. And went on to say that he intends to serve for 4 more years and do a great job. And, you know, cool. Guys, I got to be honest with you, man. I think this is interesting. I fall in line with, like, the Mount Rushmore bit on this. I really do. I think that there would have to be a really, really, really good reason to make a constitutional amendment to remove the term limitation, right? Not just a term is 4 years, but to remove the 2-year cap that we have in place for the last 70, 75 years or whatever in this country. Because and people will say, well, you know, Trump's going to save the country, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, well, let's put this in a couple different contexts and see how we feel, right? I would imagine that would mean any presidents going forward, which is also weird, right? Because then, you know, Clinton, Bush, Obama can't do it, but anybody, but they're still living. Albeit, I think Clinton's too old, I would think. You know, we need to put an age cap on these offices, like we really do. But I digress here. That could, in theory, then, if that allows this going forward, then, you know, when the door swings the other way, so however everyone thought, right, Donald Trump was going to win the second time around. No one, I don't think many people really thought that Joe Biden was going to win the election in, was it 2019? And, you know, we can point to, man, we can point to, was it 2020? Whatever, the last election. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Like, nobody, I think, really realistically thought that Biden was going to win. He kind of bumbling, mumbled a lot. Yeah, and, you know, we heard for months and months after the fact about his speech issues that, you know, didn't seem to be present at all during the first 30 years of his fucking political career. But so what happens then is we get another one of these people, another Joe Biden, another career politician that's a Democrat this time, right? That comes in and he wins. And then he wins a second time because it has happened, right? Look at Clinton. He served two consecutive terms. Obama served two consecutive terms, 2008 and 2012, right? So that could happen. And then you have 12 years of Democrat policies, and that allows them to survive the election cycle where they can stack potentially, right, the House and the Senate, and then you open the door for a lot of really dangerous precedent, in my opinion. And, you know, for that reason, maybe it's just the volatility of the American political system right now, I think is far too great, in my personal opinion. I think there's way too much that could go wrong with something like that to like, honestly consider this. Again, this might just, it seems more like pandering. Maybe this particular representative, this Ogles or Ogles, whatever his name is bucking for some attention or an attaboy or something, trying to just carry the bathwater, you know, which I can certainly understand. I was going to say, you know, I certainly respect, but I don't. It's annoying. It's one of those things where politicians will, I mean, but we saw it, it's not new, right? So nobody like go after this guy. I mean, you can if you want to, but it's not new, right? We saw people on the left pander after everything that Biden and Harris did for the last 4 years, everything they did, they kissed the ground these people walked on, and they were jokes. They were absolute jokes of leaders. They were potentially, this is my prediction, they will be, when we look back at this in 20 years or 50 years or 100 years and I'm long dead, right? I really do believe that the Biden administration will be looked at as one of the most lame duck presidencies in the history of our country and potentially the most damaging when you look at the impact of our economy. And that's to say nothing of the conspiracy theories people have out there around why we sent all the money that we did to these foreign countries, particularly and specifically to Ukraine, and then continue to do so after we fail Pentagon audits where we sent them an extra $60 million. We just, you know, forgot to move a decimal point or something, and hey, oop, there's $60 million. It's like, yeah, just a drop in the bucket, right? Nothing to be worried about. But yeah, we saw these politicians pander to the highest office. Because yes, people come and go in the cabinets and things like that, and people want to build good favor. And on one hand, I do respect the whole career building mentality that can go into some of that. I've certainly, you know, done a little bit of ass kissing in my professional career because it's just sometimes what you think you have to do, especially when you're younger or early on. You really feel like you need to gain some traction, I guess. But I still, I don't like it. We have enough problems with our politicians and the lack of transparency in this country. We really, really don't need any more of it. And I think that if we were, I don't know, this one, it would take some extraordinary circumstances. And I don't, by the way, think that any kind of global conflict would be a good justification. In all honesty, I think it would be a good justification for the opposite direction. to not pass this. And I can only help but think about, if you guys are fans of Star Wars, and I am, so if you're not, I'm sorry. And if you're a fan of Star Trek, then I don't even know what you're doing on this podcast, to be honest with you. But if you watch the prequels and you're familiar with the Star Wars lore, the right, they get launched into the Clone Wars. They leverage that situation to oust the Chancellor of the Republic and replace him with, you know, the new Chancellor, Palpatine, who ends up becoming the Emperor, right? And there's basically a political coup all at once, you know, Order 66 and everything like that. I won't get too in the weeds and bore you guys to tears with my Star Wars fandom, which is quite impressive, if I might say so. I know I've demonstrated a few times. The interview I did a year ago with Elliot Delp comes to mind, because he had a really just awesome helmet, I think, on the if I'm recalling correctly, on the shelf that he had behind him when we were doing our video call for the podcast. But I digress. So I don't know. Third term for Trump. We're not even a month in. I think, again, we're just jumping the gun here. I don't know if he's been that transformative, that generationally great of a president. I think he's certainly the most newsworthy for a lot of reasons, good and bad. You know, he did a lot of great stuff in the Carolinas post-hurricane. He specifically went out of his way and said he didn't want media attention for, which that doesn't happen when you're Donald Trump in 2025 or 2024, I'm sorry. But yeah, I mean, great to the level of being added to national monuments that are 100, you know, over 100 years old. And then we're going to make amendments to our country's constitution for him. I don't know, guys. That I really don't know. I have a hard time swallowing that one. So I guess we're just going to put a pin in those, and we'll wait and see what happens. Like, ultimately, I think you and I have very little say in it, short of, you know, obviously voting in your elected representatives that will vote in alignment with your, or hopefully will vote in alignment with your feelings and beliefs. The Rushmore one bothers me a hell of a lot less than the third term one does. I think that we're setting some pretty high expectations, some pretty lofty goals for the work that'll be done by the Trump presidency. And it does appear we're heading in a great direction. You know, I thought that Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense was a really interesting pick. I think there's some controversial things going on that are going to shake things up. I think that's what we need in this country. Now, they could also backfire. It could go really, really badly. I don't know. I'm with you guys, just kind of holding on and waiting to see. So who knows? But more to come on that. I say not for sure, because I don't think we'll ever hear about it again, honestly, as I'm saying that out loud. But want to get to the larger topic here that I mentioned when we first started the discussion for this week's sit rep. And that was, interestingly, some comments made by Eric Prince during a Breitbart interview. So if you guys, again, you're not familiar with Eric Prince, he founded Blackwater, some private military contracting company that basically made a lot of headlines for pretty much the absolute worst of reasons that you could imagine in that realm. There was a lot of controversy with the contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan and things. He was brought before Congress, all that stuff. Like, he had a real rough go of it with Blackwater, and ultimately I believe he divested himself of the company. And he's doing something else now. So he comes from, I did read his book, to be completely transparent, which I did enjoy, by the way. He does come from a family of means, if I recall correctly. He was he's a former Navy SEAL officer, so he does have military background, military experience. But he made some comments, if you guys recall, to what is going on right now with us taking a stronger posture and steps towards greater control over securing our borders, specifically our southern border of the United States, right? President Trump came out, and one of the first, you know, executive orders that he signed, which, I mean, he did a ton. So did Biden on his first day. So I really hate that that's a precedent, but not really what we're talking about. He signed an executive order classifying these Mexican drug cartels as terrorist organizations, which a lot of people, including myself, applaud. It's a very good move for a lot of reasons, because once you're classified officially as a terrorist organization, it does open up some interesting avenues for the choices and the options that you have available at your disposal to address this problem and try and dispatch these you know, evil assholes with what they're trying to do, whether it's human trafficking, weapons trafficking, drug trafficking, all the traffickings, guys, they got them all. And you can now face that problem in a much different way than before. We were trying to be very diplomatic with Mexico. We were trying to, you know, basically put this all on the shoulders of an underfunded border control agency, and it wasn't working. And then we had the Biden administration come in and go, hey, we're gonna let everybody in because we're cool. We want you to come vote for us. So, yeah, I'm a fan of the changes. You know, a lot of people don't like the concept of governing via executive order. I am one of them. Although in this instance, I believe that that's what this particular instance, classifying an organization this way, I believe that's what an executive order is for, because it allows you to make more immediate action. I think that our government is so divided right now that if they were to try and, I don't know that there's even, if it's even the correct legal process to try and like pass a bill or something for that. I don't think it is, as I'm saying it out loud, but I could be wrong. If you guys know more than me, which is totally possible on this, message me and let me know, because I want to make sure that we got this accurate. But I think executive order was the way to go to classify these cartel operations as terrorist organizations. Because if you look at the things they do, and you look at the horrific shit that their people do when they come into this country, they've done nothing but damage America and damage American life. If you guys have never listened to it's like a 3-hour interview with John Norris on the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. John Norris was a game warden in California, talked about how he stood up the marijuana interdiction team there, or MET team, and how they were fighting the cartels, because these cartels would come in, they'd have illegal grow sites. And the bigger problem being not just that they grew, you know, marijuana, but that they used terrible banned chemicals that they brought over the border with them. And it would have these catastrophic and just awful impacts on the ecosystem and the wildlife there, and to protect the grow sites, they'd put all kinds of poison down, so then you'd have wild animals like bears and stuff go eat it, and then they would just die. And a lot of these are protected species and things like that. There's implications there, right? And you know, that's all tied back to the cartels, right? And then obviously we know we have a human trafficking problem in this country, and not all of it, but a hell of a lot of it is controlled by cartel organizations, or at least connected that way. Same thing, if you guys are familiar at all with Operation Fast and Furious, where the ATF had the harebrained idea that they were going to go ahead and sell guns illegally and be aware of it, right, to the cartels, and then do nothing with that information. That was essentially, that's the Cliff Notes version of what Operation Fast and Furious was. It was wasn't called gun running, but they there's something else. There's another term that they used for it. That the officer that, or the agent rather, that wrote the book, what they called it, and it was just a terrible idea where they would allow people to make straw purchases, and they would follow them. They would track the orders. They would watch them basically go across the border, and then that was it. And then it resulted in the loss of life of a Border Patrol agent, and then it ended up in front of Congress and stuff. It was really is a really dumb idea. So the cartels are tied to all of this stuff. So the concept, getting back to the point here, the concept idea that was brought up in this interview with Eric Prince, always the entrepreneur, are letters of mark. And what these would do, they allow private organizations to operate in the quote unquote dead space in between government bureaucracies, which is where Mexican drug cartels really operate. That's why we haven't been able to effectively combat and stop the cartels, is because we've been playing softball. Basically, they operate in that gray area between two governments. They're able to be more agile and move between, I guess, the large governmental machines of the United States and Mexico. So to give you guys some context on what a letter of mark is, so big picture here, we'll start with the Constitution. Article 1 of the Constitution is what establishes the legislative branch of our government. Essentially, it's what created Congress, okay? And I bring that up because within Article 1 of the Constitution is Section 8, which outlines the legislative powers, okay? So when we talk about our three branches of government, we want to define what the legislative branch has the ability to do. And in Section 8, there's 18 of these clauses that outline the powers, and number 11 of those is to, and I quote, to declare war, grant letters of mark and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. There's also a contract clause in Section 10, just because some, you know, we do have a couple rogue states in this country. Not really rogue, but they kind of go out and do their own thing. Like, I'm looking at you, Texas and Florida, that would probably just, like, as soon as somebody came up with this idea or brought it back to the table, go, fuck yeah, we're doing it anyways. Everything's bigger in Texas, right? There's a contract clause in Section 10 of Article 1 that prohibits the states from exercising certain powers granted to the federal government and granting letters of marque and reprisal. That's one of them. So we won't see, Florida being Florida man or Texas being better than everybody with what they do. And God knows their governor has worked very hard to try and address this issue. I could see him going and exploring this avenue if it was a real possibility. But letters of marque and reprisal. They're government-issued commissions that basically authorize private citizens. They used to be called privateers or corsairs back in, you know, the 1800s when we were, you know, a Navy-based country because the plane wasn't invented yet, right? Authorize these private citizens to perform acts that would otherwise be considered piracy, like attacking enemy ships during wartime. And then they get rewarded with a cut of the goods or the loot, right, that they bring back. You know, they give it all back to the government, whatever. And then you would take a percentage, I don't know, like 15-20% off the top, which if it's a whole ship full of cargo, right, that would be worth stealing, maybe it was $1 million, you get 20% of that right off the top. So that's, you know, like $200,000 for what you did. That's a really high level example, but I think it gets us all on the same page. So these were really a commonplace practice, largely during the mid 16th to 19th centuries. They allowed our government to fight wars with mercenaries rather than our own armies, which saves us time because, again, the governmental machine, it turns very, very slowly, you guys. We all know that. We've all seen that. We've all witnessed it. And we're largely behind the power curve with these things. And it's a problem. But it also allows us to save money by going with mercenaries. Now, what I will point out is, when I read this, the first thing that came to my mind is, well, all right, so you're talking about employing mercenaries. Isn't that not allowed in international conflicts, right? And I looked it up and found this little tidbit. So December of 89, the UN passed Resolution 4434 with the International Convention Against the Recruitment, the Use, Financing, and Training of Mercenaries. This was entered into force on October 20th, 2001. And usually it gets referred to as the UN Mercenary Convention. So I think this one was really born, and another book that I read. You guys should read, man. While I'm thinking about it, if you don't read physical books, like, I guess you could do a Kindle too, but if you're not reading, man, you guys are missing out on so much good shit. And obviously the breakaway from the screen time. But the conflicts in Africa that were, you know, for lithium mines and diamonds and things like that. You guys have probably seen the movie Blood Diamond, right? All that shit. Some really, really bad, some catastrophically horrible, heinous shit that went down in Africa is largely why the UN stepped in to provide aid and relief, and ultimately why they passed that resolution, because mercenaries were being used and brought in from other parts of the world to fight these wars in pursuit of, like I said, like lithium mines, diamond mining, and you're basically displacing whole peoples and destroying whole cultures and genocide. The word genocide got thrown around quite a bit during a lot of that stuff. I think some of the companies that were mentioned too, it was like Executive Outcomes. That's a big name that got thrown around, so I don't see them anymore. Triple Canopy, I think, was at least involved, but they restructured and did some other shit because they used to be a contractor during the GWAT and stuff, but I'd have to look up the title of the particular text that I read. It was really good. I found it to be very fascinating and would encourage you guys to read it. But the UN is not a fan of it. But all that aside, it was slightly more recent the last time we used one of these letters of marque than I thought. I was like, oh yeah, this is probably something like 1800s at the latest that we would use something like this. Because once we got into planes and stuff, you changed the ball game and all that. But I guess when Prince was asked by the interviewer what the process would be for a letter of marque to be issued, if it would come from the White House or Congress, I guess Eric Prince was able to tell him, like, the last letter of marque had been issued after Pearl Harbor to a blimp operator who was authorized to hunt Japanese submarines off the coast of California. And I don't know if that happened or if he was ever successful in claiming any money for that. A lot of people think, though, that this letter of marque would be essentially, it would allow private military contractors to operate on American soil, and I guess to some extent, probably on Mexican soil too, if they got the right permissions, right? To essentially fight the cartels, intercept their trafficking, which would then disrupt their business and cash flow. Now, I'm sure a lot of Americans would jump at that and say, oh yeah, hell yeah, I'll go be a contractor. I think there's probably a lot more to it than many people would be willing to admit. It's not just a bunch of armed Americans can go grab a case of Bush Light and jump in the back of their trucks and go shoot at the cartel down on the border. And I did find, I want to share this as well. I found a couple other snippets that are more recent and, for this subject is, I'm reading this as directly grabbed off of, it might have been, I forget what website it was. The issue of Mark and reprisal was raised before Congress after the September 11 attacks, and again by Congressman Ron Paul in 2007. The attacks were defined as an act of air piracy, and the Mark and Reprisal Act of 2001 was introduced, which would have granted the president the authority to use those letters of Mark and Reprisal against specific terrorists instead of warring against a foreign state. So there is some sort of precedent here. I don't think it actually got passed, though. The terrorists, right, were compared to pirates in that they are difficult to fight by traditional military means, which is totally accurate. It's why we basically lost the conflict over there during the GWAT, is because we play by different rules. That's not news to anybody. On April 15th of 2009, Paul also advocated the use of letters of mark to address the issue of Somali pirates operating in the Gulf of Aden. However, neither of them were enacted into law, and that's kind of brings us closer to today. During the 2022 Russian invasion of Ukraine, the United States Congress considered a bill to authorize the president to use these same concept letters of mark and reprisal in order to seize yachts owned by Russian oligarchs, which is weird that Russian oligarchs, whatever, we don't have to get into it. But Senator Mike Lee and others have suggested consideration be given to the potential use of letters of mark and reprisal and efforts to curtail the presence of Mexican cartels. So not exactly new, right, in our nation's history, and not exactly old in their reference to things that might be going on. Now, I think that if this were to happen, we would see a handful of military contracting firms pop up here in the United States? 110%, I do. I think that if that were to happen, you would see it become a multi-billion-dollar industry overnight, and you would see all of the same spending that went into the global war on terror, perhaps at maybe a slightly smaller scale, be poured into fighting the cartels on the southern border. And I have mixed feelings on that, just because there's so much spending that was not tracked well and so many mistakes that were made with all of that during the GWAT. I think it would actually gain traction and support, though, because people have seen firsthand now in our country, on our own soil, with our own family in some instances, our own neighbors in our own cities and towns, we have these gangs and these assholes, these cartels and whatnot and everything coming up through the southern border. So yes, the cartels are the only ones listed as currently, right, listed as terrorist organization in that manner, but that could change, right? It's just an executive order. It can be signed in, no time flat and with very little approval process, which worries some people, me included, just depending on what they're doing with it, right? I trust, to some extent, I guess, I trust Trump's judgment on using those executive orders more than I did Biden, because he did everything by executive order, trying to circumvent the legislative process. But I digress. And I only mention it because specifically we have that Trend Agua, that gang that keeps coming up in the news cycle in cities all over the nation, where they're taking over condo complexes and apartment buildings, and they're committing, acts of violence and crimes. And yeah, I mean, just recently I read something in the news here in Michigan that in some pretty affluent parts of the area, we have, we have these guys being picked up. Trend Agua, whatever, this fucking, I think it's Venezuelan gang, they're here in Michigan, which is crazy because Michigan is about as far from Venezuelan weather as you can get. Like, it's freaking cold up here right now, man. Like, we're back in the 20s. So, I mean, whatever. Like, if there's money to be made, they'll move. They'll do what they, do. That's what those organizations are all about and whatnot. But I think it would be really, really interesting to see, PMC start operating on American soil. You know, like it circumvents that whole posse comitatus where you can't deploy the armed forces on American soil or against your own people or whatever. Which I should know the letter of that one more than I do, but there's a problem with that, and this would circumvent that because you're not deploying the military. You are utilizing these privateers, these mercenaries, to operate on American soil and hunt down and, you know, halt these cartel activities. So it's a very interesting concept. I think that when you start looking into it and getting into the granularity of it, intelligence gathering, it leads to a lot of questions like, where are these places going to get their intelligence? Is the government going to share with them? I mean, maybe. Local law enforcement, probably, but it'll probably be information that gets leaked. I see things going to more of a corrupt or corruption type situation and scenario, more than like an actual just overwhelming amount of success. Because anytime you start throwing large amounts of money at a problem, yes, you can improve it to some degree, but typically you end up creating other issues and other problems. And I know that there's not a perfect solution, you guys. It's really complex. If it was an easy problem to solve, we would have solved it long ago. You know, issues with the southern border and trafficking, it's not new, right? It's not new. It's not unique to this presidency. Yes, it was exacerbated to great lengths by the previous administration for political reasons, which have been noted many times on this platform. So I don't have to get into my thoughts, my feelings, my opinions on, you know, flooding the country with people who could potentially help swing a presidential election in your favor. I just don't know what it would look like. If it's just bringing in two military contracting companies and each giving them, you know, what, two or three border states, and telling them to go to town, like, could that work? Maybe. I don't fucking know. But then you also talk about boats and stuff. So then you actually technically open up any part of the country, and then also the northern border through Canada. Like, it's not, let's not talk about Canada like they're totally exempt from this discussion either. And we're already having issues, politically speaking, on the tariff front with Canada and Mexico. And I think that this is going to get ironed out more quickly than a lot of people, you know, believe. But there's already impacts on the tariffs. I don't really have a whole lot of information on it, but I know to some extent there's some goods and services that are particular to the tactical community, which are going to be impacted. You know, Op4Night Solutions and, you know, probably companies like Cold Harbor Supply that are Canadian, that are going to be, it's going to suck a little bit. It's not everything, right? Not everything has a tariff on it. There's only certain goods and items, at least as I understand it. But it's not like we have the coziest of political relationships right now. I know Trudeau is on his way out in Canada, and they're working on finding another person from his political party. So we're not going to have a Biden to Trump, you know, flip the switch type situation going on there in Canada. It'll be more of the same, largely. And then, you know, Mexico. Mexico has basically just been complicit in allowing a lot of this stuff to happen. You know, you had local government officials in Mexico along the border advocating for people coming into the United States. They think it's reasonable. They think it's okay. I mean, you would think they want their own people to stay in their country and help make their country better and prosperous and grow and be successful. And that was not the message that was being given by these elected leaders. So it's kind of concerning. And again, the fact that, you know, I don't like looking to popular media and things like movies and TV for information or references in terms of relevancy when trying to make a point. But I mean, like, look at every TV show and movie in the last like 40 years that references the integrity of the Mexican government. And by the way, like, I am Mexican on my mother's side. We are Mexican. So I say this knowing well firsthand, hearing stories and things. There's not a lot there, you guys. I know there are some good agencies and good people, you know, that are fighting the good fight. But largely, there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot. So we'll see what happens. I've never heard of this before. I'm sure now that it's into the news cycle, we'll actually hear probably quite a bit about it. I would not be surprised if this is something that actively gets pursued, especially when you look at how much money, like I said, corruption, right? How much money could be thrown at this issue? This starts to open a whole lot of doors for a whole lot of bad shit in terms of, I don't want to say like embezzlement and everything, but a lot of people stand to make a lot of money. And then you start looking at adjacent industries and the way that they can make money. So if you throw billions of dollars at this problem, you know, and then all of a sudden you have these PMC companies and they're going to, you know, you need contracts for night vision, right? Because that's a standard now. The cartels have night vision. We had Matthew Smith on talking about his book that he wrote and his own experience as the undersheriff in Pinal County in Arizona, right? That they're a near peer force. They have complex communications. They have night vision. They have anything that we have, they have at this point. And part of that, you know, that's because they were able to just get it across the border, buy it here legally. And then it's illegal to take night vision across the border. That's why there's ITAR paperwork attached to it that everybody bitches about. But that's why that happens, is so we're not funneling these technologies and these weapons and gear and components, right, to help strengthen the position of our adversaries. But here we are. So, you know, there's a lot of money. It could really help bolster our community. A lot of companies that are adjacent and things like night vision is one example. Large orders for weapons, large orders for optics. So companies like SIG and Aimpoint, Neotech and Trigicon, like if they're not already making enough money, they would probably, you know, make more. And then there's training and then ammo production. And you know what I mean? Like plate carriers, nylon goods, armor manufacturers, like these are going to be big contracts. So yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot from a business perspective that I think would make this a very attractive avenue for how to solve this problem, and not attractive in the ways that you would think, like, ooh, this is really attractive because this could really fucking work and could really make our home safer. No. This is attractive because this can make some people a lot of fucking money, and there's people out there that need, you know, to make money and don't want to go back into the armed forces or maybe have the skills from law enforcement or military experience and are willing to, you know, roll the dice on that, so to speak, right? And then it doesn't, they're responsible for their own healthcare and everything. There's not like 401k, there's not all these benefits that government employees and soldiers and Marines and stuff get. So yes, it saves us time because they're able to move way fucking faster and the people that they're bringing in are already trained, right? And it saves you money because all of those benefits are out the door and you're paying a set amount on the contract because that's how it works. Again, if you guys have questions on this stuff, I really want to look up the book to tell you guys what it was. It was a fascinating read. But if you guys look into the whole bidding process for government contracts for anything, like that's why there's armored car companies like Garda and stuff that you guys might see driving around on your streets here that do cash transport for banks and stuff. They actually have components that operate as military contractors in overseas countries. And they bid for that work. So, you know, it's actually a lot more common and a lot more present in modern life than we believe. But it could be, very interesting to see how this goes. Honestly, I think that it could be a solution that saves us money. I know right now we're trying to cut government spending, you know, DOGE, whatever, the Departmental Office of Government Efficiency, I think is what DOGE stands for, right? They're looking to make cuts. I know Kash Patel, if he is in as the head of the FBI, and I know a lot of people like him, a lot of people that are at the FBI don't, which is kind of why I do like it, because man, I know there's a lot of really good people that work at some of those government agencies. I don't think that any of this is to undercut their effort or make their lives more miserable or more difficult, but understanding that there have been decades of mismanagement and poor leadership at multiple government agencies. I'm looking at the FBI and the ATF specifically, if I'm being honest. And there needs to be adjustments made. There need to be changes made. And the government spends way too much fucking money. And I think regardless of what side of the aisle you sit on, we can all agree with that. Like, that's money that can either be, A, they can cut taxes, which is great. That's what the Republicans like to run on. That's what we all want to hear as conservatives, is tax cuts. And if you're on the liberal side of things, right, I'm assuming we might have a couple liberal listeners out there, that's money that can be, at worst, redirected to a different cause that, you know, that needs it. So whether it's medical research or, you know, funding law enforcement or, you know, I don't know, right? There's tons of government programs and things out there that are always in need of money. And if you cut them from one place, you can add it without increasing your overall budget. You know what I mean? So trimming the fat, not a bad idea. It really isn't. I know a lot of people think that these guys, I think it's Vivek Ramaswamy, Vivek and Elon Musk are kind of the two that I think are heading that, last I heard anyways. I don't know if it's even official. And I know there's a shitload of legislative red tape that they're going to have to go through if they're really going to start trying to, you know, slice back budgets and get rid of stuff. But really interesting stuff going on in the country right now. And I think that this letters of mark and reprisal conversation is very interesting. I think it just kind of gets added to the top of the list, though. You know, like, hey, this could be really big. It could be really bad. It could be really great. I don't know. I think that there would have to be some guardrails put up for sure in terms of, like, rules of engagement and, you know what I mean, like more than just basic insurance liability. Because if you're, I mean, I don't want to see some of these border towns turn into the Wild West where you got car chases and shit that happen, like what you would read about or see clips of happening driving through the streets in Iraq and stuff, you know, shootouts and stuff with some of these assholes. Because then you actually do have in the United States, here's kind of the wild card to it is over there, there wasn't really an established and competent law enforcement element, right? It was the contractors and then it was the coalition forces. And then they were working to stand up and train up local law enforcement who were largely corrupt. That's not an opinion. That's like that's a fact. You can look that shit up. But here in the United States, you have competent law enforcement who have decades under their belt fighting along the border with traffickers, with gang and cartel members. And now you're potentially looking at like blue on blue situations. You're looking at potentially blown operations in terms of like stings and stakeouts and undercover operations where you're not wanting to share information between a government agency and technically it's an NGO, right? A paramilitary firm that's going to be operating in your AO. Like that's a real question of how do we coordinate those efforts? How do we make that work? Do you have like a designated liaison? I assume so, but then you really do knowing how much corruption and things is baked into this whole conversation on both sides, right? How much information does one side realistically want to share with the other and how much trust do they have? You know what I mean? It's not a lot of time to build a trust and build a working relationship together in terms of trying to meet this this overarching goal of combating these cartel groups, halting and combating human trafficking, arms trafficking, drug trafficking. You know, I mean, drug trafficking can be one of the biggest ones. You look at the number of deaths we have in this country every day, every week, every year, right? Tied back to fentanyl. And where does the fentanyl come from? Like it comes up, it's trafficked through Mexico, through our own southern border, and then it is dispersed out onto the streets. And when you're talking about trying to get intelligence out of people to like pinpoint what's going on, there would have to be some kind of like cooperation and information, swapping, right? Because, and this was pointed out to me when I was having this discussion earlier, or you know, in a group chat, was the people that are going to be picked up, you know, on the corner, are not the direct cartel contacts. You're talking 3 and 4, 5, 6, even layers deep to get back to people with the actual cartel ties. So, it's not just a war fighting effort like it was over in Iraq. You're actually talking about networking. There's investigative work that goes into this. There's months and years of work and information gathering that has already gone into place, right? That is being chased down, right, on a day-to-day basis by United States law enforcement. So I don't know how you make this work correctly. I really don't. And I'm not saying that you need the government to come in and hold hands and play babysitter between these two. But if both sides, and I think the goal is for different reasons to be effective. I think the goal for U.S. law enforcement would be to keep their communities safe because that's the oath they took to protect and serve, right? Then obviously the goal of these PMC groups would be to make money because if you recover a load, I don't know, $50 million in cocaine, let's say it's coke, maybe it's fentanyl, I don't know, $50 million of whatever, right, whatever booty that they are able to recover in their operations and their activities, right, then they can turn around and take it back to the federal government for their percentage, and it's probably not going to be 10%, it's probably be closer to, like, if I had to guess, I would say, like, 25 or 30% of whatever they bring back, because it's a net gain for the government regardless. So it's basically just, do we want to split this 50-50, even Steven, or, you know, what are we going to do with it? And then, I mean, then it also to me raises the interesting question of what are you guys going to do with all those drugs? Like, as the United States government, what are you going to do with all those drugs, man? Like, are you just paying this money out of pocket to then like help solve the problem? Because that's a lot of money, right? So $50 million out of the federal budget to pay for drugs that were taken off the street, and then you got to ensure that they actually get destroyed? Or are we going to see some weird, fucked up Iran-Contra shit going on where we hand this off to a different organization from a different part of the world and create go about creating a whole separate slew of issues which follow the same fucked up, you know, roadmap of, you know, like I said, Iran-Contra or what we're dealing with right now at the border and military contractors and the CIA. I mean, like, shit, this is what movies are written about. So, I mean, I don't want to get too convoluted with it, you guys, but it should be, it'll be interesting. So, thank you guys so much for listening to that rant. Like, I don't know a ton about this, but I know a little bit. Make sure you guys are subscribed to our YouTube if you haven't already. There's all kinds of good stuff dropping on there on a pretty regular basis. And we're getting a lot better at it too. So if you guys checked us out a couple months ago, weren't that impressed, we are getting way better. Just picked up new mics, doing a lot of interesting things. I'm very excited for the video work that we're doing. Also, we have a Patreon page. You guys can check that out. And, you know, if like and follow us on whatever platform you're listening right now, that shit helps us out a absolute fuck ton, you guys. Thank you all so much for listening to me rant. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. More to come probably on the Letters of Mark and Reprisal, maybe less so on the other shit, but always love doing these because it's a great opportunity for me to just unleash and rant and share my seemingly ridiculous knowledge on some rather interesting topics. So stay safe out there, everybody, and we'll catch you on the next one. Like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.